Check. First of all, how y'all doing? Was that an incredible movie or what? Michael B. Jordan? We have Melanie Diaz. Octavia Spencer. We have Forrest Whitaker. We have Nina Yang Bon Jovi. She's one of the producers. Let's give it up for all these wonderful people here. And I'll be moderating. My name is David D. If you don't know me, journalist from the Bay Area. So shout out to y'all. I think the first question I want to ask is to you, Ryan. Earlier when you were introducing the film, you talked about this was a labor of love. And I wanted to know if you could expound upon that. I mean, we often hear people say that their art is a labor of love, but I think it took on deeper meaning when you did this particular piece, and maybe you can really go into what that really means when you said it's about love.
Oh, man, that's a deep question, Daddy. Start off deep. For me, like as an artist, you know what I mean? I think that it's always important to work on things that you're passionate about. You know what I mean? Things that mean something to you. And I think that with this story, people were so affected by it because they understand they understand what it's like to lose something that you love. You know. And that's where grief comes from. That's where sadness comes from. That's where fear comes from, you know, and all those things. And I thought with watching the case and watching the aftermath, and watching what happened in the Bay Area, a lot of times we kind of got politically split. You know what I mean? People were on different sides of the fence, and I think that who Oscar was, the person, kind of got split along those lines. You know. And I think that what was mulled over in the trial and after the process and all of those things was the fact that this human being didn't come home to the people that he loved, you know, and that his life mattered to those people, and everybody's life matters to somebody, you know. So that was where I wanted to make the film about.
I think one of the things that stood out for a lot of people was the attention to detail. You got the mannerisms of Bay Area, you got the slang, the music. It's something that I think people could really appreciate. And could you speak to that aspect? That, I mean, you really, I think, touched a lot of folks. You could sit there and they could say, this is really our story, collectively speaking.
That part of it wasn't necessarily difficult. I'm from here, I was born here. You know, my mom squeezed me out at Kaiser Hospital in North Oakland. You know, my dad took me in this theater to watch like Boys in the Hood when I was way too young to see an R-rated movie. But I've been in the Bay Area my whole life, and it's a place that I have an infinite affection for. And it took me to travel, to go to college and travel, you know, later on in life to realize how special home was. So I definitely wanted to, you know, Oscar lived and died here, you know, so it was important to do my best to get the Bay Area right. And I love for my actors to speak on how they did a great job of capturing that, because Mike's from New Jersey, Mel's from New York, and Octavia's from Alabama. So,
well, let me ask that. You know, Michael, you taking the role of Oscar Grant, who means so much and has symbolized so much to this area, how did you really capture? What was the process to make sure that you got that right?
I mean, I honestly was spending time with Ryan. You know, I moved up to the Bay about a month before we started filming, and I just really had to, like, just be here. You know, like, time was, like, the biggest thing for me. And then spending time with the people that knew Oscar the best, you know, with his family and friends, and just trying to get whatever information I could from them to kind of, like, build up this character, because, you know, there's no audio or video on him for me to kind of to go off of. And I guess one of the biggest pieces of advice that I got was from Forrest, and it was just, you know, you can't imitate anything. You know, you have to be a representation of who Oscar was and what he stood for, and just do your best to kind of deliver your take and trust yourself and trust your instinct. And that's kind of, like, that was my approach. And just spending time up here was honestly the biggest thing for me.
To add to that, the San Francisco Film Society actually had a program called Off the Page that enabled they funded for Mike and Melanie to come to the Bay Area and spend time out here early and workshop the script.
Melanie, would you add to that? And I think the tension and the emotion, I think that was felt really strong. And what were you able to draw upon to really capture that?
I had the pleasure of meeting the actual Sophina, and the one thing that was really
apparent. A little mic so we can hear you clearly.
Hello? I had the pleasure of meeting the real Sophina, and the one thing that was very apparent was how much she loved him. It was, you know, he was her best friend, you know, the father of her son and her everything, and I know what it is to love someone like that so hard that it hurts. And I don't know. I don't know how I got to that place, but it was very clear, the relationship and just the love. And I could never imagine losing somebody like that. So.
Octavia Spencer, it's a pleasure to have you here. What, you know, playing the role of Wanda, did you meet with the family? What were you able to draw upon to bring that character to life?
Well,
not
first
the character,
of all,
but to bring her to life.
Wanda is, I have to say, a heartfelt thank you from all of us for allowing a film crew into your life after suffering such a tremendous loss.
You're
with
a beautiful
such
woman,
grace.
Very strong woman.
So thank you for that. And I have to be honest with you, I'm not a mother. I have no idea what it's like, and I pray to God I never have to know what it's like to lose a loved one in such a senseless way. But I immediately knew when I met Wanda. It struck me when she walked into the room, I'm like, oh my God, we could be sisters. And we bonded immediately. And I just realized how different we were. Whereas she is very quiet, very poised, very regal. I'm very loud, very animated, very theatrical. And so there were so many things that I had to, you know, capture. You know, it was all about capturing her essence, because you can't really, in such a short period of time for me, there was just really no way to, I didn't want to mimic her. I wanted to basically do her son some justice and do her justice by, you know, representing her in a way that was truthful to who she was and who she was to her son. And that's about all I could do.
Forrest Whitaker, when we first heard that there was going to be a movie made about Oscar Grant, and your name was attached to that, you know, I think a lot of people felt a sense of ease that, because of your body of work and your reputation and your integrity, that it was going to be in good hands in terms of somebody making sure that this was done some justice. That's the first part. The second part, I don't think a lot of people understand what a producer does, so maybe you can explain that and what really attracted you to this story and to make sure that that this was brought to life the way that it was.
Well, it's two questions. The attraction. I think one was this story. I knew about Oscar Grant. I didn't know the depth of Oscar Grant, what had happened in that. Ryan came in and he told us how he wanted to address this story. Nina and I had that meeting with him, and he expressed how he wanted to put the full story on the screen, the humanity of the character, the journey that would allow us to understand this issue through a human way. And it was this passion that I felt from him, and this what I thought would be journey that we would go on together to help tell this story and hopefully help heal and bring a face to it and allow it to come out for people to understand it. This is the passion that we walked into, was that vision. And I think this visionary filmmaker was able to galvanize all these artists to be able to follow in a way that is the thing that I follow, I believe, and deciding to move into producing. I mean, there's a lot of elements about producing in regards to the story and the logistics. I mean, Nina was producing with me. I mean, she should also speak on that.
Well, I think it's appreciated that you gave this young film writer and director a chance, you know, and that doesn't seem to always happen a lot.
We'll continue.
Yeah,
just to add on to what Forrest was talking about, what a producer does is, if you're fortunate enough to run into a great filmmaker, a visionary like Ryan Coogler, you jump at the chance to make his first feature film. And we were so fortunate to have met him and taken on this journey. It wasn't easy. And when I met Forrest, as a producer, I was thinking, gosh, you know, was that four years ago when I met you? And I'm like, working with him must be an easy ride because he's Forrest Whitaker. And then I realized being African-American and making African-American content is so tough, even with an Oscar winner. And then, but you know, we fight the good fight. I remember being a minority coming into this country when I was young and the discrimination my mom faced. And then knowing what African-Americans go through, it's tenfold. If you're a young African-American male, it's probably 100-fold. And I hope that one day those who are in the audience who are of color don't have to deal with this type of social injustice.
I think one of the things that stands out in the film is the relationship with Oscar and his daughter. And some people would say, well, you don't have to show that story. You could have went in so many different directions. But in the just looking at the fact that so often black men are demonized, and when you talk about fatherhood, you don't see the black man, you know, front and center, at least as far as mainstream is concerned. Can you talk about the importance of bringing that aspect to the screen and really focusing on that?
Well, I was very interested, like, in the film and telling the story about the person. You know, I wasn't as interested in telling the story about the incident that happened at the station, but more about the guy. You know, when I researched Oscar, you know, I found that there were three people in his life that had a really intense value, that he had really intense relationships with. It was his mom. You know, it was his girlfriend, fiance Sofina, and it was his daughter. And I think that relationship between him and Tatiana was the most intense relationship. He was a very active father, and he had and they had been through a lot of things together. You know, he had recently, you know, before the time of this film, he had been away from her when he was incarcerated, and recently back out. And when I met Tatiana, you know, it just made all the sense in the world that, you know, to hear her talk about her dad. She was 4 years old when this happened. She still remembers him. You know, to hear her talk about her dad and their relationship, it was a very profound thing. You know, it was a great opportunity for us as filmmakers to shine a light on that relationship.
Anything that you would add to that, Michael?
Yeah, like you said before, it was like it's you know black males or just, you know, a lot of males in general are always stereotyping not being good fathers, not being around. And I think the approach that Ryan took to really highlight the person that Oscar was, not just a statistic or a number, was really the way to go. And to show how much he cared, like you said, like you know, his three important people in his life, and his daughter played a major role in the reason why he wanted to get his life back together, because he was tired of letting people down, you know, and to look at that face, you know, and to see the sadness and know that he was part of the cause of that. I feel like, you know, and anybody, and at 22 years old, having the mind state to really understand that and realize that, and really realize that he had to get his life together, I think was very important. And I mean, honestly, most of it was on the page, so I was just, you know, a tool in that situation, just trying to bring whatever realness I could to the situation.
I know earlier you mentioned that people are from different parts of the country, yet the plague of police terrorism, police brutality, the killing of black and brown people is, you know, epidemic. In the past year, over 300 black men, black people, were killed by police since Trayvon Martin. And if you do the estimation, you find that every 28 hours, a black person is killed by the police. We're not even talking about brown, which you might find similar rates. And if you add up those numbers, you're talking about since Oscar Grant, they're estimating more than 1,000, 1,500 black people were killed by the police. I bring this up because whether you're young or old, I don't think anybody on this stage can sit there and not know of a police killing or police terrorism incident. And so how important is that knowledge of wherever we are in our lives when we talk about and bring this story to life? How important was, well, let me just rephrase that. Did other incidents, whether it's Sean Bell, if you lived in New York, or if it's some of the stuff that's gone down in the South, or, you know, pick any incident, pick any person, how important was it to make sure that everything got across correctly? Because we don't often see these stories and we don't see the humanity. And yet I think somebody in New York who went through the Sean Bell or Amadou Diallo can relate to this Oscar Grant picture. Or if it's the Annette Garcias or the, you know, the Bluford, Alan Bluford, or whoever it is, a lot of people are looking at this film and being able to relate. So can you speak on just that, as people knowing about police terrorism in your own lives and what this movie will, how this movie will take on extra weight?
I guess I could start that. I'm going to be honest with you. I almost didn't take the film because I had a day and a half off between projects, and my agent said, you need to read this script because they need to know, they want to know if you'll do it. And they sent me an email, and it had a short film that Ryan had done and the script for Fruitvale and footage from Oscar at the BART station, some real footage. And I watched the footage. I watched Ryan's short, which I thought was brilliant, by the way. I don't think I ever told you that. And I watched the footage. And I was angry. I just had angry was the emotion that I felt the most. But I was hurt. And I thought, because of Trayvon Martin, anger, and because of the recriminations that happened here in the Bay Area, anger was not the correct emotion to attach to a project that is this important. Because aside from all the politicizing, yes, police brutality is a problem. But what I was more taken with, and I told my agent, because of that, I have nothing to offer this but anger. And I'm sure this woman is much more than angry. And I do not want to be an angry black woman on film with this type of subject matter. And my agent said, great, I'm glad you feel that way. You need to read the script. And so I read the script, and I saw that it was written by a young man named Ryan Coogler. And I thought at the time, Ryan Coogler, you know, was a young Jewish guy. So I'm being honest, okay? I read the script. And I said, well, what a refreshing way to present this, because he didn't have Oscar Grant saving people from burning buildings. He didn't have him lifting cars off of, you know, people. He just showed him doing regular human interaction. That is what this situation needs, because when you can see the person across the aisle that you deem is different from yourself, when you can say that that person is a human being, then you can empathize, and it is you're less likely to see these occurrences. So I didn't want to bring the police brutality into it. I wanted to bring what I was as a human being, and that's what I want people to take away from this, that every life has value, and I was proud that Ryan chose that story, quite honestly.
Michael, can I add to that?
I can speak to that if Mike and Mel, y'all want to speak to it at all? Okay. You ask really good questions, Daddy. I'm going to speak candidly. Being a young African American male, unfortunately, I put a lot of my friends in the ground. You know, too many to count. You know what I mean? To be honest with you, and one thing I live with every day I leave out of my door is the thought that it's a chance somebody could take my life. You know what I mean? And 9 times out of 10. It could be somebody who looks just like me, if that makes any sense. I don't know the statistics. I don't know the statistics on how many of us get killed, how many of us die at the hands of police. But I know that's even more than that at the hands of us. And if you think about living life where the people that can kill you are the people who are most likely to kill you are the people who look like you, the people that should be your friends, people that should be your brothers. And also you gotta watch out for the people who are paid to protect you as well. Is a very it's a difficult situation to live in, and I think that more than anything, what those things boil down to is a lack of viewing somebody as a human being on the other side. Be that in a turf conflict, be that I'm from this side and you from that side, you know, I don't see you as a full human being because you're from that side. So I can do things to you that are inhuman. I can take your life. I can shoot at you when you say something I don't like. Or be it looking at through different lens. I'm a police officer and you're this, you're a thug, you're a criminal, and I would do things to you that are inhumane. And that's okay. Because you're not a human being. Or looking at it from the reverse angle. You know what I mean? You're a police officer, you're a pig, you know what I'm saying? You're not a human being. I think that as human beings, we have a tendency to dehumanize the other for whatever reasons. and at the end of the day, what I wanted to do with this film was have people wonder why that is, you know, and have people think about that in their own lives. So I hope that answers that question.
Okay. My last question, because we're going to run out of time, and maybe some of the veterans that have been doing this for a while can hit this. I mean, when you talk about movies, you know, and you go all the way back to Birth of a Nation and know what sort of impact it had in terms of dehumanizing us and the fights that, you know, everybody from the Paul Robesons to the Michael Michauds and all the way up have tried, you know, to counter and put a new perspective. You have this film out now. Where does this take us if it's even more successful? You know, and I'm asking people like you, Octavia, you, Forrest, and others, does this open the door? Does it lay out the groundwork to say, you know what? We need to have more multidimensional black folks on these screens. They can't be the, you know, the simplistic reality TV type of caricatures that we see that I think add up to inhumaneness. But with this success and seeing people like yourself, Ryan, showing this sort of talent, does this open the doors? And if not, what should people in this audience do to make sure? And
buy tickets.
That we have this, you know.
You gotta support the films. You gotta support the filmmakers. You gotta support the vision. You gotta support the films. I mean, that it starts there because Hollywood is a business first and foremost. It is a business. It is an art form, but it's a business. And the decision makers who fund movies, were it not for these two people, we wouldn't be up here. Were it not for, I mean, truthfully.
Well, in asking that question, I'm thinking more in terms of taking that independent route and finding people like, you know, a Forrest and others that are able to move in another direction and not get caught up in the machinery. But I would like you to address that as well,
Forrest. Because it's a business, as you say. I mean, certainly when you have models and they're working and people can look at those and like and emulate them and want to grab a hold of that financial possibility, of that critical possibility, then it opens up more doors. Now, this has happened. We've seen it happen in waves many times. You talk about Oscar Mucho. You talk about, wait, a year. I mean, we're talking so long ago where he was running studios and stuff. At a certain period, the 70s, the industry was sort of saved by black films. And then and there's a movement that continues to go on. And at this moment, we're at an interesting time, sort of a tipping point of times, because there's a lot of films of auteur filmmakers being made that are black. And these films are starting to come out. They'll be coming out in waves, I think, over the next year or so. I mean, of course, Ryan's film is a very special one in the sense that looking at it on its individual basis is telling a story that it will touch all of you, and hopefully you will, through your own dialogue, move that forward and recognize those prejudices inside of yourselves as well as those prejudices outside of yourselves to start to address profiling and different issues. But there are a lot of films that are going to be coming out, and it will need your support, as Octavia said. The model is that if there's success and people are making funds, making monies, then they'll invest more in those films. Now that's true in a lot of ways. But if you really analyze films that were being made, black films that were being made, just to talk about it a little bit, you'll start to see that films that were made for under $8 million that were black films over the last number of years that were released on it at a certain time would usually garner a certain amount of money. That money was actually one of the most successful niches of filmmaking that there was. It was absolutely successful. Now, we had to push out the word, and I don't think that word got out clearly enough that these films were actually the most successful films in that niche. Now we're in another time where there are these types of films, which are very special, which are a statement in themselves and are moving, but we have to support them, and we have to let people know that these films are what we want, you know? And because it can silently go along for a long period of time, and people not even recognize the success of some of those films. If I show you the statistics, you'd be blown away, you know? But anyway, that's the answer to that bigger question.
Okay. Yeah. Well, they're giving me the wrap-up sign, so a couple of things.
Thank you.
First, let's give it up for the cast, the writers, the directors, the producers. Let's give it up for them.
Thank you so much.
The second thing, let's give it up for Oscar Grant's family for sharing. Third, let's give it up for people in the Bay Area that came out, protested, and really tried to bring justice for Oscar Grant. So give it up for yourselves. I also want to remind people that after this, at Evident Jones, they'll be having an after event. So y'all are welcome to go down to Jack London Square. That is courtesy of Uncle Bobby, who wanted me to let y'all know that that's where folks will be gathering. So y'all are welcome there. And again, we want to thank everybody for coming out. Great job, Ryan. We're looking forward, and great job to all of y'all. Michael, Melanie, Octavia, Forrest, and Nina. Let's give it up for them one more time, folks.